I think it's really feels like it's going to be down to two individuals. So anything can happen.
What will a Trump-Kim summit come down to? It's Friday, April 20th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're a part of our program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, relief organizations scramble to prepare Rohingya camps for monsoon season. The former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff says China is America's biggest foreign policy challenge. And we visit a joint Chinese-Cambodian TV station. That's all on today's VOA Asia. South Korean President Moon Jae-in says that North Korea is not imposing conditions on upcoming summits with him and U.S. President Donald Trump over banning nuclear weapons from the Korean Peninsula. Moon told corporate executives in Seoul Thursday that they have not attached any conditions that the U.S. cannot accept, such as the withdrawal of American troops from South Korea. He added that all the North Koreans are talking about is the end of hostile policies against Pyongyang, followed by a guarantee of security. Moon said that he did not think that denuclearization has different meanings for South or North Korea. He said the North is expressing a will for a complete denuclearization. The South Korean president said dialogue between the two Koreas must continue after the April 27th summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and the North Korean-U.S. summit, for which no date has been set. That inter-Korean summit on April 27th will take place in the uninhabited village of Panmunjom, an inside intense and highly fortified demilitarized zone that separates the Communist North and the Democratic South. VOA's Brian Padden tells us this historical site, where the Korean War armistice was signed in 1953, has since been a key point of contact for cross-border communication and a major tourist destination.
The Panmunjom meeting site, located on the border between North and South Korea, was first established in 1951 to negotiate the truce to end the Korean War. The talks and the fighting went on for three more years before an armistice was signed. Today, Panmunjom has come to symbolize the ongoing division of the Korean Peninsula. It is the only site along the heavily fortified 250-kilometer-long demilitarized zone border where soldiers from both the North and South are in close proximity to each other. No civilians live in the cluster of blue huts within the joint security area that is controlled by both North Korea and the UN command established during the Korean War.
The whole job of the Joint Security Battalion here, the ROC soldiers and the U.S. soldiers that you see out here today, is to provide security to enable dialogue between the two talks.
Panmunjom has been the site of numerous cross-border talks, including recent planning sessions for the upcoming inter-Korean summit. The meeting between South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will take place in the Peace House, a conference building on the South Korean side of the DMZ. It will be the first time a North Korean leader has visited South Korea.
They're still working out exactly the series of events, so how the two leaders will egress into the building, and then, of course, they'll have staffers that come with them. So that's still all being negotiated.
While the border region is controlled to maintain a tense peace, there have been isolated incidents of conflict and violence over the years. In November, security cameras in the DMZ recorded the North Korean military shooting one of its own soldiers as he raced across the border to defect to the south. The joint security area is also a major tourist destination where over 100,000 people visited from the south in 2017 and nearly 30,000 visited the site from the north. One of the main attractions is what is often called the Propaganda Village on the north side of the DMZ. A group of brightly colored buildings that South Korea says is uninhabited and was built to produce the illusion of prosperity in the impoverished North. Brian Padden, VOA News, Seoul.
Meanwhile, the head of a Nobel Peace Prize-winning anti-nuclear campaign group said Thursday it would support possible nuclear talks between the United States and North Korea, despite condemning bullying tactics and threats that caused a surging tension between the two states. Beatrice Finn, the executive director of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, said that U.S. President Donald Trump has been intensifying tensions with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un since each of his hostile tweets has prompted a similar reaction from Pyongyang.
And then Trump tweets, "My button is bigger than yours," and you're like, okay, I see it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it feels a bit like a measuring contest. And a safety blanket and, show how tough you are, which is extremely concerning.
Finn credits South Korea for encouraging diplomacy between the two countries, especially by inviting North Korea to this year's Winter Olympics.
And what actually worked this time was very skillful diplomacy by South Korea, using the Olympics, for example, being very careful at not coming across as threatful, instead opening up for dialogue, inviting them to come to the games and have a lot of these kind of initial conversations, stroking egos on both sides.
Finn was speaking ahead of a 2-week conference on the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty that begins on Monday. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. U.S.-Japan trade differences remain after Trump-Abe talks. South Korea says North not imposing conditions on nuclear talks. Citing Rohingya massacre, Myanmar army chief urges soldiers to obey law. Pakistan says fencing of the border with Afghanistan is on the fast track. And India moves to fix inexplicable cash shortages. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. We hope you are enjoying this Friday morning. I'm David Byrd in Washington, and this is VOA Asia. Aid agencies are racing to strengthen fragile shelters in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, as monsoons are forecast to hit overcrowded Rohingya refugee settlements. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the International Organization for Migration is building bridges, access roads, steps, drains, and slope protection to enable communities to better weather the monsoon.
The International Organization for Migration is one of many agencies stepping up work to prepare the camps and strengthen flimsy shelters so they are not washed away during the heavy rains and cyclonic storms. IOM spokesman Joel Millman tells VOA the impact of so many people on this fragile environment is damaging, even when there is no rain.
When hillsides can fall, people can go unreachable because there are no roads to get to them, bridges will be lost. So, of course, all we can do is prepare, and we want to make this clear to the international community that it isn't just IOM. Everybody is preparing for what could potentially impact almost 1 million people.
Millman says IOM and partners are racing to upgrade shelters in Teknaf, a southern sub-district of Cox's Bazar. He says more than 15,000 shelters housing nearly 80,000 people are at risk and in need of urgent improvement. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We're happy you're with us on this Friday. This is VOA Asia. From the anticipated U.S.-North Korea summit to concerns of a trade war with China and others, the United States faces several foreign policy challenges, and a White House national security team is in transition. On this week's edition of Plugged In with Greta Van Susteren, several experts, including the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, retired Admiral Mike Mullen, discuss those challenges and what they mean for U.S. foreign policy going forward. Elizabeth Chernoff has more.
As a tit-for-tat trade spat between the United States and China continues, former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Admiral Michael Mullen called Beijing a growing giant, telling VOA's Greta Van Susteren its growth is key to how the world is shaped.
How China grows and what our relationship is long-term is really critical. If it's constructive, if we can have a constructive relationship with them, then I think that's good for the world. If it's destructive, then I think it's really bad for the world. And that's what we've got to sort out. I actually believe that in this century, the most important bilateral relationship globally is the one between the U.S. and China.
The widely contested waters of the South China Sea remain in dispute, with countries like Japan and the Philippines looking to the U.S. for help in resisting maritime expansion by China. Daniel Twining, who previously advised Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on foreign policy, says Beijing's dominance in the region puts the world economy at risk.
China does want to go global. It wants to project out of Asia. It wants to wedge apart the U.S. and its allies over time, and we've got to be very mindful about that.
Joshua Walker, who heads global strategic initiatives at the Eurasia Group, says China's interests are both economic and military-driven.
If you control that sea lane, it basically breaks up the entire international liberal order that the United States set up after World War II. And what's interesting is U.S. strategy now is trying to link both India and Japan as kind of these main focal points in the Indo-Pacific and bring all of our allies together.
Some say China's economic rise is due in part to a broader leadership void on the world stage.
The people that are moving the needle right now, two of the people moving the needle are Xi Jinping and Putin, and they're the wrong guys as far as I'm concerned.
Last month, Chinese lawmakers voted to abolish presidential term limits, paving the way for President Xi to rule indefinitely. On the heels of his reelection, Russia's President Putin is set to stay in office for the next 6 years. Elizabeth Cherna, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, we visit a joint Chinese-Cambodian TV station in Phnom Penh. You're listening to VOA Asia. The blossoming friendship between China and the Cambodian government has become so close that a Chinese majority-owned Khmer language television station has built studios directly inside the Ministry of Interior in Phnom Penh. As David Boyle reports from the Cambodian capital, it's a peculiar joint venture that comes as Western-backed news outfits are being shut down or harassed ahead of a national election in July.
It's a typically frenetic morning in the studio of Cambodia's newest broadcaster, Nice TV, as reporters beam in the station's bread-and-butter stories, residential disputes and traffic jams. But there is nothing typical about the relationship between Nice TV, a private, majority Chinese-owned station, and Cambodia's Ministry of Interior, a minority shareholder in the venture. This relationship has seen the Khmer language station studios built right in the middle of Cambodia's Ministry of Interior, where its initial goal is to put a more friendly face on the news that better connects with audiences.
So the content is look more entertaining, but some part, as I know, they will work to inform the people about the how to enforce the better public service. That's the purpose to have the TV, because the ministry run and have big tasks to the people basically at the grassroots level.
To do this, Nice TV is harnessing the power of an app called Tutu Live that allows viewers to stream themselves live into the program. The station's COO, Jason Liu, was happy for us to film one of these broadcasts, but only agreed to speak for an audio-recorded interview himself. Liu told VOA the station was entertainment-focused, with an emphasis on user-generated content and engagement, rather than politics and conflict.
The ministry has a police network all around Cambodia, so we want to create social news, and we can use this resource to create the best social news in Cambodia.
For staff at the Cambodian Center for Independent Media, who have watched as the country's free press has been largely dismantled ahead of this July's elections, the joint venture presents a worrying relationship.
So for me, it look not good. The image of the location in the ministry, it sound, you know, the work of the private company interferes to the works of the ministry.
Liu maintains that Nice TV is a purely commercial enterprise, but when asked about its relationship to the Chinese government, he did not want to speak on record. David Boyle for VOA News, Phnom Penh.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, and you can download our podcast and take us with you. You can also find us at voanews.com. Let us hear from you on VOA Asia Facebook or our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Keith Holmes. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy your day.